The Nick Handley Show.
Ron hates Mondays. Hell, I'm not crazy about them either. I also don't like Tuesdays, Wednesdays, or Thursdays.
AM 590, ESPN Omaha.
Hour number two here at the Nick Handley Show. TJ Henning alongside in the Buffalo Wings and Rings studio back there in Omaha. And I'm out in Waco, Texas, Baylor Ballpark. Getting ready for Nebraska season opener against Baylor tonight, which you can catch right here on AM 590 ESPN Omaha. TJ, I'm looking at the college Wisconsin there. The college basketball slate. Scorched by a Flaming Hat Nacho. The slate this weekend is just very, you know, the best. So we're here for baseball. If you are a college basketball fan, this is where you need to be for basketball tomorrow. In fact, the Nebraska-Baylor baseball game got moved up to 2 o'clock tomorrow because right behind the ballpark here is the Farrell Center, the basketball complex where number one ranked Baylor will take on West Virginia.
And it's on ESPN Plus again, which I have, but still, like,
and
I don't know.
Not a big fan of that.
I feel like they need to make that more on just the regular ESPN, but I get it. And hey, Baylor, they've got the second-ranked women's basketball team, so they have a chance to have the number one in both men's and women's basketball.
Right?
That'd be pretty impressive.
So I was actually talking to their SID when I was making my way in here, and they do have a new basketball facility that will be going up here soon. So, and that's supposed to be a pretty big deal. And it couldn't come at a better time if you're thinking about the momentum. We've seen the Baylor women's team have just some great runs. I mean who can forget, was it Brittany Griner? And, I mean, the success that they were having and kind of rivaling UConn there for a little bit back, you know, in the mix of things again. It's not that Baylor's men's team has been bad, but it was always kind of the Scott Drew thing of getting over the top, of trying to win the game that mattered. I mean, they've had some good runs. They've been Sweet 16 teams before. In fact, we're just talking about the Doug McDermott team, his senior year. They lost to that Baylor team. So there's obviously some pretty good stuff here with the men's program, but to see them number one and holding that number one ranking for as long as they did when, boy, that ranking before was pretty much an interchangeable thing all throughout the season. So there's a lot of excitement with this basketball program. I'm really curious to see because with the new football stadium, the McLean Stadium out here, it's a really solid kind of new look for them that they've had now for some years. Right off the Brazos River, and then you've got, I think, one of the best ballparks in the area here, Baylor Ballpark. Now to get a sort of state-of-the-art basketball facility for both men's and women's basketball, and then what I heard is they're going to take the Farrell Center where they currently play right now and turn that into a volleyball and gymnastics, kind of gut it and sort of probably similar to what they did at the Vanney Center and really make that just a volleyball-only type facility. So the complex here is cool, but to know that, I mean, tomorrow that's kind of where the focus of the college basketball world will be. It's just not a great weekend of marquee matchups.
Yeah.
You know, if you're looking at the top 25, there's nothing that really jumps off the page other than that one. And I'm kind of with you. It's like, really? So the best game this weekend is on a subscriber-based, you know, subscriber-based type viewing?
Yeah, so I got on for a second here just talk Baylor Athletics and just where they came from and where they are now. But before I do that, just I remember seeing a stat that kind of blew my mind. So I'm with you. Scott Drew, I think, is a really good, maybe even great coach, just considering where he's brought that program from. And I agree, like, just hasn't been able to get over the hump. But I saw a stat where before he joined Baylor as the head coach, Baylor had been in the AP top 25 poll just twice in their entire school history, I believe. Since he's been there, they've been in the top 25 poll like 232 times, and that they speaks as weeks. So he's just absolutely obliterated. I mean, twice in their school history, he did 232. So I think he doesn't get enough credit, Nick. And then just think about Baylor, like that nice football stadium, talking about this new basketball stadium. Like when we were in the Big 12, that was the, like, one of the worst teams That was always at the bottom. And now, I mean, it didn't end well with what came with football there.
Sure.
And all the, you know, the culture that they brewed down there with the sexual assaults and everything. But, I mean, you had a Heisman Trophy winner come out of Baylor. I mean, Robert Griffin, and just an absolute fantastic player to watch. But who would have thought of that? And who would have thought that Baylor now, the number one ranked team in basketball, they have a good baseball program, football's on the up. Like, what Matt Rhule did, like,
women's basketball's back.
Women's like, too. Baylor, like, a lot of schools would strive to be Baylor right now. And that's kind of crazy to think.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, too. You might have to look this up. Baylor volleyball, I think, has been doing very well, too.
Yeah, I have no idea, but I wouldn't be surprised.
I'm pretty sure that they've been pretty solid. So, yeah, it's an interesting topic because you're right. When pre-Robert Griffin III, I remember the stadium was just kind of, I mean, it reminded me of just a very – very large high school stadium. There's just nothing to it. There's just very, very boring. There's no charm with it.
Yeah.
I mean,
it felt like a SWAC team, right? Because they weren't they in the Southwestern Athletic Conference?
Yeah. They were part of that. And you know, Waco itself was never really known to be like this great destination. Like, oh, yeah, you're playing Baylor. And that wasn't known to be this great destination. And all of a sudden, you know, you've got a lot of things thriving here in the city. But you're right. I mean, the athletic overall, just the shift in competition and how competitive they've kind of made themselves across the board in both male and female athletics, it's been impressive. So you do think of a program in an athletic department that has really thrived in kind of the newer look, the Big 12. I feel like we forget about Baylor a lot. I do. And, you know, what's even more impressive is what took place here under Art Briles at the end, that could have sunk a program to the point that people don't want to go here. You know, you're losing a fan base, you're losing donor dollars, you're losing a lot of things. And that's why I give so much credit to Matt Rhule and really being able to kind of pick up the pieces of that thing. Now, it wasn't like they got smoked with all kinds of sanctions or anything. It wasn't like SMU there in the late 80s. But as far as just the overall feel of what the heck was allowed to go on. You know, people kind of wondering that, and I'm sure a lot of the fans here and a lot of the folks here in Waco were probably thinking, okay, what's going to come of our football program going forward? I give so much credit to Matt Rhule in being able to identify what the brand on the field still meant when it came to recruiting, but also not really running away from the uncomfortable topic of the previous coach and what existed. I feel like he did a good job of balancing that and was able to get people to feel good about it, but also making sure people understood that their student athletes were doing the right thing on and off the field. Mm-hmm. That was such a big part of it. Basketball, I'm with you with Scott Drew. And remember, they had that really weird situation happen before he got there where you had, you know, the player die. I mean, there was some really kind of dark stuff going on. And all of a sudden, he brought that program really to a respectable level that even if they weren't chasing down national championships and falling short of that, they were always a consistent
NCAA
top
tournament.
What's that?
They were regular in the NCAA tournament under Scott Drew.
Right. They were a consistent top 25 program. You know that if Baylor was on your schedule, that it was going to be a tough team. I think the thing about Scott Drew that people would always say, and I've always heard critics of him, and I think some of it was fair, is, you know, game management at times in big games, you know, sometimes it's questionable or adjustments and stuff. But overall, I mean, where the program is now and consistently, I mean, it's pretty impressive. And don't forget, you got a really impressive coach coming in here in Dave Aranda to take over Matt Rhule, who has left for the NFL. So to think that in that short of time, Matt Rhule left this program from what he had to pick up the pieces of and what he's now sort of handing over to Dave Aranda as he goes to the NFL, that's remarkable. I mean, it really is.
Yeah. I mean, just think about the guy who we had on yesterday, Turner Gill. I mean, started off the Matt Rhule era by winning at Baylor, and you just thought, oh, man, this is going to take quite a long time. And then Matt Rhule was just able to turn around. To me, Baylor is a good example of – so many people say, like, oh, Indiana football, why are you guys even trying? That's a basketball school. Oh, Kansas football, why are you guys even trying? Like, just worry about the basketball team. Oh, Nebraska basketball, that's a football school. Why even – Baylor wasn't known for football or basketball, and all of a sudden they produced a Heisman-winning quarterback in the BCS pool. Like you mentioned, basketball, they were known for like bad basketball and a player shooting another player, and all of a sudden they've just reached great heights in both those sports. So to me, I've always found that argument stupid and lazy, but like Baylor, right there, example. They weren't known for football or basketball, and now they are very good in both of them.
Sneaky good game again in college basketball tomorrow night in the Big East. Seton Hall trying to avoid a losing skid because they go to the Dunkin' Donuts Center tomorrow night. How about that? Ask Creighton how tough that place can be to play. Yeah. And Providence, they're not this – I mean, when you look at the record and you kind of look at where they are in the Big East, they're just kind of lying in the weeds. There's nothing that you're like, okay, this – if you're just looking on the surface, thinking, oh, gosh, this is a tough team. But for Seton Hall, this is a big-time moment for them because we talk about it a lot on this show with teams in various sports, but especially in college basketball, have you peaked too soon? And Seton Hall, just watch him. Hey, when you got Miles Powell, you're going to win a lot of games. He is a special player. But losing at home, now having to go to Providence, it could be either a good thing or a bad thing. I mean, it could be a good thing to kind of be able to go on the road, not worry about some of the home distractions and take out your frustrations on a team that you should be able to beat. Or are they still kind of feeling sorry for themselves? You know, is there a little bit of that hangover effect that could carry in? You know, Creighton, Villanova are hoping so. Creighton doesn't have the most challenging of opponents in the Big East, even though the Big East provides challenges every night. They get DePaul at the CHI Health Center. Villanova in the same spot where Creighton is. So they're going to be keeping their eyes, I'm sure, on that game. I think that is a sneaky good game tomorrow.
Yeah. Can I throw in one more?
Yeah.
So Illinois just lost to Michigan State at home by one. So they're now in fourth place in the conference. Right behind them and tied for fifth is Rutgers. So tomorrow you've got Illinois at Rutgers. And Rutgers, believe it or not, has not lost a home game all season at the rack. So Illinois at Rutgers, 3:30. When you leave the Nebraska basketball game, you should get in time for home for the start of that one. I think that's a sneaky good game as well because both those teams are fighting to finish at the top of their conference. And again, Illinois and Rutgers were not major players last year, but Rutgers undefeated at home still. Let that sink in.
Let this sink in too. And not that this is a good matchup, but let this sink in. Northwestern will be at 13th ranked Penn State.
Man. And he made it 9 seasons.
I know.
I didn't think Pat Chambers would last that long.
No. I'm looking at some of these top 25 matchups. Syracuse is 14-10. Oklahoma State is 12-12. Two programs. I mean, Syracuse especially won national championships. But Oklahoma State used to have a pretty strong basketball brand as well as football. But Penn State, I mean, that is just... unreal.
Yeah, that's another one. Like, why do you care about Penn State basketball? Don't worry about that program, but now look at them now.
It's a microcosm of kind of the wide open factor of this college basketball season.
Yeah.
Of some of the different stories, the unpredictable stories going into this year of like, holy cow. Like, I mean, even though Rutgers isn't currently rated, as you pointed out, that is going to be a tricky game. Rutgers is, I still think, a top 25 caliber team.
Yeah.
Just because they're not actually in the top 25 right now, they're a top 25 caliber team. So, man, it's crazy to look at some of the teams that are represented in the top 25, the non-traditional basketball powers, and where some of those traditional powers are, North Carolina, Syracuse, Oklahoma State. Like, that to me is, it's mind-blowing. We'll see what it means. I want to get to this story, and we'll stick to college basketball. It has nothing to do with actual games itself, but in fact, my wife's alma mater, Cedar Falls, Iowa, Northern Iowa, is denying a student for making a half-court shot who would have won $10,000, but they were literally a half second past the clock. Is this right? We'll get into it next. Hey, don't forget to join AM 590 ESPN Omaha and Omaha's team, the UNO Mavericks, on Saturday, April 25th, for the Clawson Lake Maverick Run to support UNO Athletics. You can register and find out all the details by going to am590espnradio.com. Looking forward to being out there again for this great event. You got the 10K and 5K run and walk for just $25, and also kids run for free. Again, go to am590espnradio.com and get registered for the 2020 Clausen Leahy Maverick Run Saturday, April 25th. Hey, what's the temperature out there? I thought today in Omaha was supposed to be like close to 40. Is that not the case?
No, it's 28. It feels like 16.
Yeah, I heard the wind is okay.
Tomorrow it's going to be 48 and 51 on Sunday.
Okay. That's pretty good. So we'll bring some warmer weather back with us. That's good. Please make sure it's better. I'm telling you, I am oddly confident that we might have some more like mild weather than the last couple of years in March. I don't know why. I have no idea. I'm not getting this on good authority. This isn't message board stuff.
No, I mean, overall, it's been a pretty mild winter.
It has been bad. We're seeing a lot more green grass. Not green grass, but more grass than snow. That's always a good thing, yeah. Right?
Bill Walton was talking about grass last night.
I think Bill Walton's on grass, but we'll get to that, too. This is kind of an interesting story and kind of shame on Northern Iowa here. Did you hear about this young man Wednesday night who was doing one of those, halftime, make a couple of shots, win some money. It involves a half court shot. I mean, I'm pretty sure every college basketball program that gets more than 500 people in their door does something like this. Well, apparently the grand prize was $10,000. And And so the Northern Iowa student Dalton Hinch had a chance at the prize. He made a layup. He made a free throw, a three-pointer, and did make a half-court shot. And what he did within the crowd thought was a 30-second time frame. Even the PA announcer was counting it down, and he got the half-court shot in at 27 seconds. So he even beat the PA announcer's countdown. So everybody's thinking, okay, sweet, way to go, man. That always gets people fired up.
Oh, yeah.
And so it was announced on Thursday, the following day, that Northern Iowa Athletics said the insurer covering the event required all four shots to be completed within 24 seconds. So he was 3 seconds past what they apparently required to be the time frame, yet he was 3 seconds under what was announced from, I would assume, the game day operations folks, the marketing folks. And so, in a way to sort of save face, this was the tweet from Northern Iowa, like trying to basically say, hey, everything's cool here. Last night, Dalton Hinch put in an incredible performance, completing the $10,000 shot in 27 seconds. Unfortunately, the insurance rules are it must be completed in 24 seconds with no rebound help. Apparently the sponsor for this is CB Seeds of Parkersburg, Iowa. So they said, continuing in the tweet, CB Seeds wants to congratulate him with a $2,000, a free trip to Arch Madness and gear. So basically they're like, hey, he did an awesome job. Even though he didn't necessarily complete it, we're going to give him $2,000. We're going to give him a free trip to Arch Madness and gear. So we're good, right? I mean, that covers, the difference between 10,000 and two, right? Like, it's like, oh, hey, this is ridiculous. Like, I understand that a lot of these things, for people who don't kind of know how it works, you do have insurance on all of the, win a car, or, win a Scali, however
it might
go.
That's why you sign something before you participate.
Right. But, I mean, I'm sorry, but if the UNI marketing team or the game day event staff didn't clearly explain this to the person, that's garbage, man. I'm sorry, that's on you.
Yeah.
You've got to pay that out. I don't even care if this is the athletic department saying, hey, that's our bad. Yeah, I mean, you might fire somebody. Unfortunately, these are usually interns, student interns and stuff that are sort of running those game day operation or, event things. But to say like, oh, but wasn't that awesome? You know what? Even though the insurance people are going to kind of poo-poo it, how about the sponsor stepping up and throwing in $2,000 of their own money and giving them an all-expense-paid trip to Arch Madison gear as well? Isn't that cool? No, you're missing the point. This wasn't the kid's fault, so why is he having to get shortchanged on something he did? Come on. Yeah. I don't know what their budget is out there in Cedar Falls, but that's garbage.
Yeah, so this is a story near and dear to my heart because final year at the Bob Devaney Sports Center, I hit a half-court shot
before
Husker basketball men's
game. You didn't.
I did.
You did? You got did you post it on social media?
Yeah, back in the day I did, yeah.
Okay. As long as there's a footprint, because if it wasn't posted on social media, it did not happen.
Yeah, I think it's on my Instagram and Twitter if you want to go find it out there. But so I was able to half court shot, and I won a free suite at NBC Suites because it was the NBC Suites suite shot contest.
Oh, okay.
And had I maybe just had a foot on the line or just a half second afterwards and it would have gone in and didn't count it, I think I would have initially been disappointed, been like, okay, I guess, you know, I didn't make it. But if I had $10,000 on the line instead, I think I would be like, are you kidding me? You got to give me this thing. I just entertained this crowd, and you're not going to give me this? Like,
wait a minute. So you didn't end up getting the suite?
No, I did. I did. But, but I was just saying if I would have like missed that, I don't think it would have been upset because it was only just a free suite. But if it would have been 10 grand like this kid was going for, I would have been like, are you kidding me? Give me that money, or at least give me half.
Did you ever see the movie Rainmaker with Matt Damon?
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, is it the same insurance company that, you know, whatever's great benefits or whatever that they had to sue because they refused to pay out claims? Is that the same insurance company that's insuring the CBCs of Parkersburg? They're like, you know what? I think he got rebounding help. We can't have that happen. I get it. If this thing was like for 50 grand or 100 grand, okay, I could see being a little bit more stingy. But 10 grand for a guy who basically did everything that was asked of him to do? Like, you're gonna quibble over that? That's weak. They need to hire old Rudy Baylor, Matt Damon's character. They need to sue him. That was just dumb. Well, let's go to the AM 590 hotline. Bruce is in Omaha. Hi, Bruce.
Hey guys, how you doing?
Good.
I was just listening to your story, and it reminded me of one that we witnessed earlier this year at one of our state colleges, where they were giving away Raising Cane for a year if you made a layup, a free throw, a three-pointer, and then a half-court shot in the prescribed amount of time. Well, the kid did it, but then they went back. Of course, everybody in the gymnasium thought he had won it. Everybody was applauding for him, but they went back after the fact, and they looked at the replay, the video replay, and his foot was on the line at half-court. So even though they didn't tell the crowd this, the kid didn't get any of it.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
So because we know the percentages of making a half-court shot, they – increase dramatically when you have a foot on the actual mid-court line, right?
Well, apparently, but I mean, his the percentages of getting Raising Cane's for a year went from 100% to zero, so he didn't get anything. It was
bad. That is terrible. That happened this year?
Happened this year, and it was a college kid, because we actually even knew the kid. We were in there watching the game, and you know, everybody was excited for him and thinking he won Cane for a year.
Yeah,
and to even make it worse, he hit like every shot, like on the first or second attempt, just ripped right through it. And then they went back and watched the video replay, and his foot was on the line for the half court shot, so they didn't give him any. Well, they gave him a T-shirt or something.
I love how they had to go back on replay. They're like, got to make sure this thing's legit though. First, we're gonna challenge this thing.
Apparently, they do it in a lot of these venues. You know, we were at a UNL game a couple weeks ago where, you know, they had three different giveaways. And they gave away the first two, including this like $1,000 winner. And then they did the thing with the dollar bill where they put it down in the end and they blindfold the guy and he's got to go by crowd noise.
I mean,
they could have given away close to $2,000 on that night if they would hit all three. So I suppose they watched him pretty close.
Bruce, appreciate the call, man.
That's
disappointing. That's so disappointing because we're talking about companies that really can afford that. And I understand there's an insurance backing, so it has to meet certain criteria, but we're not talking about a boatload of money. We're not talking about the kind of money where I feel like you've got to all of a sudden take a look at like the Zapruder film and break the thing down angle to angle and say, oh, yep, nope, that's not legit. we're going to have to go ahead and wave that one off. That's just, man, come on, folks. Let's be better than that. Let's be better. All right, go talk some hockey. Sean Leahy of Pro Hockey Talk, NBC Sports. The very latest, including why my Chicago Blackhawks need to start selling off the team. That's next. I got some fantastic tweets on the mishandling of a situation by Northern Iowa. We'll get to that in a moment in our DJ's Dugout inbox. You can hit me up at Nick ESPN 590. Let's talk some puck. And we love doing this time of the year as we're getting into that key stretch, some trade deadline talk. Sean Leahy of Pro Hockey Talk, NBC Sports, joining me here on the AM 590 hotline. First of all, Sean, I want to kind of address that very serious situation that took place with the Blues and Jay Bouwmeester. What do we know, the very latest on his condition after just that scary moment Wednesday night?
Well, we know that he is, been communicating with his team, with his teammates, with his family. He's been, really kind of since that night. And it was announced today by the Blues that he had an ICD procedure that helps restore the normal rhythm of the heart. There's still unknown as far as if he can come back this season, if he can ever play again. Obviously, the doctors are still finding that out, but so far, the fact that he's been able to communicate with everyone and is alert and all that is certainly a good sign. So hopefully he's able to make a full recovery.
When you see things like that in hockey too, and I know postponing the game, it's a violent sport. I mean, it's like football. We see these types of things happen, but usually with impact, with some kind of collisions. I mean, to see something like that take place, that was a non-contact episode. Honestly, and you've seen a lot more hockey than I have, is this comparable to anything that we can remember? And was this anything that, as far as we know, had anything related to the game itself and hockey itself?
No one's been able to pinpoint that yet. I mean, we've actually, unfortunately, seen cardiac events over the last several years in the NHL. There was, Rich Peverly a few years ago, TJ Brody earlier this season during a Flames practice. Yuri Fisher was probably the biggest one. Some years back with the Red Wings, and we're not medical people, but it doesn't make sense because you hear the Blues talk about Bouwmeester, and all hockey players are in shape, but they rave about his fitness levels. He's always one of the guys that's top of the fitness testing before the season. So this is a guy who's in great shape, and just something happened internally. We don't know, like you said, we don't know if it was contact related in the game or just there was something that. It just hasn't been detected in tests, physical tests over the years for him. So I'm sure as the doctors examine him and get back the test results from this week, we'll kind of have a better idea as far as maybe why this happened, or maybe we'll never know. So we'll just have to wait and see what they say.
Sean, I want to get into the Eastern Conference. Boy, you look at the Bruins and the Lightning, especially the way the Lightning have played over the last 10 games. In your opinion, who is the better team right now between these two?
I think I get with Tampa just slightly. I know the Bruins have been playing well, but the Lightning, I think we all knew, even through their first half malaise, we knew they were the better team, and it was only a matter of time before they were going to turn things on and get back to playing the way like they were last season. And the Bruins, if you look at their record since they hired Bruce Cassidy a couple of years ago, they've been phenomenal. They've been one of the best teams in the league, and obviously they got to the Stanley Cup Final and within a win of winning the Stanley Cup last season, so it's no surprise that they're there. But with the Lightning, up and down that roster, they're just so stacked. They've been well-coached. John Cooper's been there for a bunch of years now, so the players know what to expect out of him, and it's just even if you look at like their second-third pairing on the defense, they have guys who are contributing every single night. And, I think the fact that Andrei Vasilevsky, last year's Vezina Trophy winner, the fact that he is turning it on finally is a good sign for that team as far as their Stanley Cup chances. But like you said, the way the Bruins are playing even all season is impressive. And it's going to be a dogfight, not just for that Atlantic Division title, but to see who gets out of the Eastern Conference.
Oh, and trying to establish the same kind of legitimate threat in the Western Conference. I know the St. Louis Blues with 74 points. Maybe it's easy to say them, but the Avs have been playing very good as of late too. when you do kind of look at the Western Conference, is it more of a product of there are a bunch of good teams sort of feasting off each other, or do you just think that maybe one or two of those teams haven't quite identified themselves yet?
Yeah, it's funny. You know, several years ago, the Western Conference was like the prime conference, right, where all the great teams were. Now it's kind of flipped where it's the East. Where it's the West, you got St. Louis, you got Colorado, Dallas is there. And then you have some underperforming teams like Nashville, Calgary, Winnipeg, you know, teams that we kind of expect to be better that haven't been that so far. And then you have the Pacific, which is super tight with a bunch of teams all within just a few points. And you wait, maybe waiting for a team like Vegas to kind of turn things on and mm-hmm. take control of that division. But I would say right now the Central is the prime division with the Blues and the Avs top of the list there, and the Stars right behind them. I mean, look at the Blues. There's been no hangover. I know they've kind of struggled as of lately, and Jordan Binnington has not been what he was last season. But you figure with the way that the coaching has been there with Craig Berube since he took over, and the fact that is pretty much the same team outside of just a couple of guys from last year, pretty much the same team that won the Cup a year ago. You know they're going to kind of pull things together in these final 25-ish games or so and finish strong and really put up a fight to win that division.
Talking to Sean Leahy, NBCSports.com, Pro Hockey Talk here on AM 590 ESPN Omaha. If you do kind of look at, and I was watching the Chicago Blackhawks Edmonton Oilers game the other night and seeing them without Connor McDavid, boy, the one thing that still seems to be extremely dangerous when it comes to Edmonton is even without McDavid, that team on the power play is so good. And I'm just curious, with the McDavid injury and when you kind of look at that team, I know they're sort of kind of lying in the weeds there too. Do you like that team to make a push once they get McDavid back in full strength, that they could maybe emerge as well out of one of those teams in the Western Conference?
Well, they're certainly in the right division. That's for sure. They're in probably, if you're ranking divisions, probably, you know, one of the weakest of the four, maybe probably the weakest of the four with Vegas kind of not performing up to many expectations. And obviously, you know, changing the coach earlier this season, you know, they're right there, but obviously not having Connor for the next several weeks is going to be huge. And it's really going to test their depth. I think that was the biggest issue. We've all talked about it really for the last several years is, you know, beyond Connor, beyond Dreisaitl, there's not much. You know, there's some good players. You know, Zach Kassian was having a good year, but he's also a product of playing on that top line with Dreisaitl and McDavid. So now it's time to see, you know, can he put up those numbers without Connor? You were kind of setting the pace there. And they have some young kids there like Kyler Yamamoto, Ethan Bear, you know, guys that, you know, are probably, you know, several years away from being real true impact players and kind of leaders on that team. But now it's time for the, you know, the Nugent Hopkins to step up. And once James Neal gets healthy, if he can get back to kind of the scoring pace that he did back in October, where he was, the bevy of the league, you know, the top of the league with scoring goals. It's going to be a challenge for them, and you know, they've been getting decent goaltending. But you also got to look at the rest of the picture in not only the Pacific Division but also the Western Conference, where you got to expect Calgary to get better, Winnipeg, Nashville. We'll see what happens now with Minnesota with the coaching change. Yeah. You know, and even Chicago, there's still a bunch out. You know, can they put on a second half push? So it's going to be a dogfight, and they're going to be fighting for their playoff lives for these next 2 months, and it's going to be a fun race.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up Minnesota, because now with new leadership, what do you think that means for this organization? Maybe not even in the short term, but just going forward, because them, much like Chicago, these are teams that we are so accustomed to at least seeing in the postseason, and boy, I mean, they're far from that right now.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not surprised Bruce Boudreau got fired. I am surprised at the timing. You know, they've won, I think it's 7 out of their last 11 games, and have been playing pretty well over these last few weeks. You know, they're only 3 points out of a wild card spot, but this is the second GM that's been put in place, you know, since Boudreau was hired in 2016. So certainly is the old adage, you know, GMs kind of want their own guy in, and gave Boudreau most of the season to kind of evaluate his team. And you know, Guerin said today that he felt now was the right time. You know, a few days ago, they traded away Jason Zucker, who's been a real great player for them for a number of years and still had term, you know, on his contract. And certainly, you know, the Wild kind of want to go in a bigger youth movement. The problem is obviously you have these long-term contracts like Zach Parise, Zuccarello, Ryan Suter on your books for a number of years ahead. So it's you know, eating most of your cap and kind of limiting getting some younger players, putting them in the system. So you know, he says he's going to leave Dean Evason as the interim coach for the rest of the season. And I'm curious to see kind of what direction he goes in the summer, but there are certainly a lot of names out there that can help. Like Gerard Gallant is certainly mm-hmm. top of the list for many teams thinking of making a coaching change. But you know, I think that with the Wild, they're just kind of stuck in neutral for several years. You know, the cap situation is ugly, and it's kind of really been holding them back. And yeah. I'm curious to see kind of what Greg Garland's going to do this summer to kind of alleviate that going forward.
Sean, before I let you go, what do I have to expect going forward with my beloved Chicago Blackhawks? and my question is, there are some key members of this team that have certain trade clauses. You know, guys like Jonathan Toews, it would pain me to see him go. Duncan Keith, it would pain me to see him go. But are they getting near that point that they need to listen to other teams to try to get themselves out of the current roster situation and being really hamstrung the way that they are?
Look, I'm sure there could come a point if where they are right now, if they don't move forward, I'm sure it's going to come to the point where Sam Bowman will at least approach one of them, Kane, mm-hmm. I don't think Kane, but maybe Toews or Duncan Keith. Maybe he can convince Duncan Keith to go see his old GM in Dale Talon down in South Florida. That could be a nice mm-hmm. change of pace for him. A little change of scenery there, and I'm curious to see what they're going to do with the goaltending position. Crawford's obviously been the guy for a long time, but he's had his injury issues. And will they trade Robin Lehner before the deadline later this month? Who will they keep? Because both of them are going to be UFAs this summer. Do they keep both? Do they keep one and move forward? Certainly a lot of questions going forward. Certainly some good young players coming through, which is a good sign as you're kind of in this period of trying to move forward, trying to get younger, but still having like Minnesota having all this cap space being eaten up by older players. But Bowman, this is the cost of winning three cups, right? Which yeah. I guess any franchise would take. It's just things are going to get hard and difficult, but certainly you look at some of the younger players that Bowman's brought in and drafted that, you figure in a couple of years' time when some of these contracts are off the books, things could get a little bit more brighter for the Blackhawks going forward.
Sean, did you at least appreciate my restraint? Usually I lead right off with a Chicago question, but I waited to the very end. I just felt there are more pressing issues in the NHL than the Blackhawks right now.
Yeah, I mean, I always expect it coming when I hop on with you, so I'm fully prepared, but certainly, the Blackhawks getting back, I don't think they're that far off from getting back to where they should be. It's just Bowman's is a lot of work ahead, Bowman's going to have to get very creative as far as getting the team back to where they used to be several years ago.
He's Sean Leahy, NBCSports.com, Pro Hockey Talk. Appreciate it, Sean. Have a great weekend.
Thanks, you too. Take care.
Oh, yeah. I just want to see him in the playoffs. That's all. I'm not asking for a cup. Too many years now, and I know it's not been that many years, but too many consecutive years. Two is too many to not see Chicago in the postseason, and it doesn't look like it's going to happen again. Could they look different? Could guys like Duncan Keith or even a Jonathan Toews be wearing a different sweater? That would be strange, but it might be necessary. We'll see. All right, coming up the 4 o'clock hour, we will get right down to Michigan State football with the new coach, Mel Tucker. Hondo Carpenter set to join us at 4:15. You won't want to miss that. More to come. 4 o'clock hour, talk some college football, Michigan State football with the new coach. Hondo Carpenter will jump on and give us the very latest of everything in Spartanville. Going to the DJ's dugout inbox at NickESPN590 on Twitter. We were talking about that Northern Iowa little snafu on the half-court shot and not paying out $10,000 because, well, quite frankly, he didn't get the time parameter, which wasn't explained to the young man. Garrett chimes in and says, is Jackie Moon running the game day staff at UNI? You've seen semi-pro, have you not, TJ?
Oh, of course.
Yes. There's the corn dog incident where he's telling his team not to score a certain amount of points, and then there's the moonshot that the kid from the Bad News Bears, Kelly Leak, plays the bum and makes the shot and he gives him the big check, and yeah. it's no good. And he tells him to go, oh, what you should do is just go to a big bank. You know, they got a big check cashing department. That's what you should do. And he's like, really? Okay.
You calling me a jive turkey?
No one's calling anybody a JT, okay? And then Greg says, speaking of the Zapruder film, maybe you and I discovered there were two shooters. Hashtag no cash for you. Hashtag Greg knows. Yeah. Because I just find it so funny that they're, all right, well, we got to challenge this. We got to make sure that the insurance company is satisfied with everything that is that happens. So we got to review it. Uh-oh, there's a foot on the line. Wait, was that a rebound? Did somebody rebound that for him? Well, we can't pay that out. I mean, does the insurance group, do they have to actually, like, challenge that? Do they have to throw in some kind of a red challenge flag to question the validity of the execution of that? I don't know. I don't know, but good stuff. All right, 4 o'clock hour, some more Creighton basketball. We'll be talking to Coach Mack, by the way, in the 5 o'clock hour. Also, Hondo Carpenter giving us the very latest on Michigan State, and Mel Tucker, all coming up at 4 o'clock hour.